Chats, the show where I, Josh Pigford, founder of Baremetrics, hop on a call with my founder pals and get the stories of how they started and grew their businesses. This week, I talk with Chris Savage of Wistia. We talk about growing up surrounded by computers and coding, how filmmaking helped birth Wistia, what the key parts of success have been, and how to stand out in the crowded video space. Hope you enjoy. All right. Hey, Chris, how's it going, man?
Very good. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. You're in Boston. Is that right?
Yes. Technically Cambridge, okay. But the Boston, generally the Boston area. Yes.
Yep. Are you a runner at all?
I do run. I've run a couple races in my day, but nothing longer than a half marathon.
Gotcha. So you didn't do the Boston Marathon.
I have not done. I'll go and cheer, but a marathon for me, seems great, but the Boston winter is so cold that it just seems like I'm not training in that.
Running in the cold is maybe one of my least favorite things. Just hurts. So did you grow up in Cambridge or outside of it? Or
I grew up in Rhode Island, in Providence, Rhode Island. Yeah.
Gotcha. How'd you end up in the Boston area?
So I came up here to start Wistia. My co-founder was, and I went to college together. We went to Brown, which happens to be in Providence. And he had moved up to Cambridge to take a job at a software company. And we were talking about starting Wistia, and we were like, we should probably be in the same place. We should probably be working out of where we live. And he was living in a 10-person house that had a room that was opening up. And so my girlfriend and I like moved up here and moved in. And I did not expect to stay here or to like set up roots here or to have a real company here. And now I've been here for almost 11 years, which is crazy.
Wow, that is crazy.
Yeah.
So what were you, I'd love to get like the backstory on you pre-Wistia. Like you as a kid, what were you into?
I mean, I was really into video games. And I was really into just like new tech stuff. My dad is a computer science professor, and my older brother majored in computer science and worked at Microsoft very early, as of my former brother-in-law. And so I just grew up around like just like brand new stuff. Like I remember the day we got our DVD player and we went to Circuit City and we're really pumped. I was so pumped about this. And everyone I was talking to was like, you're such an idiot. There's no DVDs out. And I swore to never touch a VHS tape again, because I was so excited about this new technology. And it took like a few years for me to break that promise. But yeah, I just, you know, I was into trying to build things, into, I don't know, normal stuff, playing soccer and running around in the streets and trying not to get in too much trouble, but just enough to keep things interesting.
So if your dad's obviously big into, computer programming specifically, or?
He's really like theoretical computer science, and now today focused on cybersecurity.
Okay, cool. Were you ever, obviously you're surrounded by, you know, pretty fresh technology growing up, but did you ever really get into the sort of development side of things?
I dabbled in high school. I mean, I learned C++ and was like making games and things. And I learned how to build web pages, but I never really got deeply into it. Mostly because when I tried, I was like, I'm not sure that this is exactly the right thing for me.
Sure. So you went to Brown. What did you major in at Brown?
I majored in something called art semiotics. And that is the study of signs and how words are interpreted and things like that. And really for me, it meant majoring in film. Okay, so gotcha. I, you know, learned about a lot of the theory behind film and then actually got to put that theory into practice by making, you know, I shot in 16mm and of course like mini DV and all the other like very fast changing video technologies that were coming out in the early 2000s.
Yep. So then what was, you met your co-founder at Brown, right?
Yep.
So like, how does the transition come from, you know, sort of essentially majoring in filmmaking to starting Wistia?
Yeah. So, you know, I had been really fortunate and had interned on a project when I was in school. which was a feature-length documentary. And it was a documentary about the former mayor of Providence, who at that time was the longest-serving mayor in the U.S., but he'd actually been kicked out of office once and was about to be kicked out of office again, the first time in 1980 for assaulting his best friend who was sleeping with his ex-wife. And the police, the chief of police of Providence held his friend down. He threw a fire log at him, and then a bunch of other things happened. So he was kicked out of office and put on probation for 10 years, became a very popular radio host in Rhode Island, ran for mayor again after his probation was up 10 years later, and won by like 100 votes. And now, when we were following him, he was basically the FBI was coming at him with like 26 charges of a number of different things, including like racketeering and all this stuff. And we followed him for 6 months because he didn't think that they were going to get him. So he's like this, he's kind of thinking this is his glory tour. And so I worked on this documentary, and of course the story was so outrageous and he did end up going to jail. And we had everything that we ended up getting this documentary all over the place. So we distributed ourselves. We got into a bunch of festivals, won a bunch of festivals, won an Emmy, all this stuff. And this is incredible for me as like a 21-year-old to be involved in this thing.
And it's like basically your first real like thing around filmmaking that you're...
It was the first real thing. And it was mind-blowing and also humbling because the filmmaker that I worked with, she'd worked on this for like 5 years. And, you know, when we premiered it at a festival, there were 600 people who saw it. And they really loved it, but like they saw it that one night and then moved on and that's it. And I kept thinking like there's bigger audiences for this stuff. And I also wanted to take this, the, you know, trailer for this film and the other movies I worked on in school and show them off online. And so back then that meant like, you know, encoding the videos yourself into QuickTime or Real Player and Flash video existed, but you had to have like your own copy of Adobe Flash to make Flash videos. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you know, it felt like very limiting and confusing. And then in 2005, I saw all of these online video companies very quickly pop up that were all doing user generated online video.
Yep.
So this was YouTube and also companies like Vio and Bolt and Video Egg, and a number of other ones are all doing the same thing. And Brendan, my co-founder, and I started talking about this. And we're like, what is happening? There's a huge shift happening in the technology. And the shift was that they were all using open source tools to do the encoding of the video. And by doing that, it was totally democratizing the ability to get video online because you didn't have to think about what format you had on your computer. You just upload anything and it would work. So we realized, wow, this is probably going to open up all these new applications where you can use video online. If there was ever a time to start something, maybe we could start something now. We can give this a shot. And with my background in film and Brendan's background in computer engineering, we thought, well, fuck it, we can figure it out. So that's what caused us to start. And we've been focused on video since day one. And it took us about a year to figure out that actually we should be helping businesses and, you know, people who use video, but they don't have video expertise, like they need more help. They need the tools to be easy and they value that. And we found some little niches to focus on. And that's, you know, it worked, which is pretty great.
So I think it's interesting around, I mean, the time that you guys popped up, you know, like 10 years ago or so, I think like I was in the middle of building random stuff, but like, the problem there was video was becoming a thing that everybody wanted, but was having a really hard time figuring out like, well, where do you put it? And, especially when it was like the user generated side of stuff, like always trying to find, I remember like having the hardest time finding a way to have like users upload a video and then basically turn it around so that it could be shown. Yeah. So like, how did you guys figure out to focus on the, you know, essentially what you're doing now, where it's you let businesses upload the videos that they want to upload and not get sort of like sucked into the social network craze of like people needing to just mass upload tons of videos?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I think we were trying to figure out It's funny, like in hindsight, it all made sense. Like I look back on it, it seems smart. And at the time, I feel like we were just like fumbling around in the dark, trying to get something to work. But what ended up happening was we found a little niche about a year after we started. And this niche was companies that wanted to share video internally. So share video for training purposes, and even collaboration. And our first customer actually was a medical device company, and they were doing clinical trials around the world, and they shot video of every surgery that they did. So the video was really important to them because that's how they were going to iterate on their device. But they were sending these videos around on DVD. So you do a surgery in Chile and it takes like 2-3 days before people can see it. And obviously that really slows things down. So we said, hey, why don't we give you, we actually at this point had built the video hosting, but we said, why don't we give you something that lets you privately share these videos? And we'll also let you see who's watching them and some other things that seem like they'd be really helpful in this use case. And they're just like, that sounds amazing. So we did that for them. And then we found some companies that wanted to do training. This company, Sonos Networks, which is a huge telecommunications company. I met the guy who runs learning by complete chance at a startup event and told him about what we were trying to do. And he's like, well, I think that would work really well with us. Like we're sending DVDs around to people to train them or we're bringing them in person. And so what ended up happening is we found this little niche and no one else was focused on this niche. So we actually could solve this problem pretty well. Yep. And then also by solving that problem pretty well, it generated word of mouth because if this guy who is in charge of learning talked to someone at another company who's in charge of learning, he would tell them like, oh, I'm using this new Wistia thing. You should try it.
So how did you, I mean, were you guys also helping people get their content online or was it you were just always providing sort of the UI and they could do it themselves?
We were always providing the UI and letting them like upload things in directly. We were very, very drawn to building a product that was self-service. And that's where we felt like the future of everything was going. And we just wanted it to be frictionless. We wanted someone to be able to sign up and use it in the middle of the night and not have to talk to anybody, which at that time felt somewhat novel because there was the, you know, sign up to get demos and all this crap that would take forever. And I was like, I don't want to talk to a person. I just want to upload it. I just want to use it.
Gotcha. So for in the earlier days, I mean, the tech around like processing and coding videos and all that stuff was, I mean, still relatively fresh, but for you guys, was the technology side the hard part or was it the business part?
Yeah, the technology side was hard, but the business part, I think, was it was both at different times, right? Like in the early days, it was like Brendan was learning like Ruby on Rails, and we were talking to people all the time about like how we could do that better. I don't think it was like that hard for him to figure it out. I think the thing that we struggled with was trying to balance the product and the business. So what stuff should be in the product? What stuff should you have to do yourself? What things should you charge for? Things should you not charge for? And some of the moments that really, in hindsight, like I'm like, oh, wow, of course, that's a smart way to do it. But back then felt like fumbling was like, we found a tiny niche for the private video sharing, got to about 30 paying customers. And then people started saying, hey, we want to use your tool to put videos on our website. We're like, well, why don't you use something else? Like, why don't you use YouTube? Like, you don't need us for that. Like, no, we want all our videos in one place. Like, and we actually had analytics back then for training. And they're like, we want these analytics in the videos on our site. We're like, okay. And we built that. And then the kind of the rate of growth of the business changed very quickly. That was kind of felt like we were starting to unlock this like simple idea that people want one platform to let them use. They almost like they don't think about it as like, I need to use videos externally or internally or for training in the market. They just think of it as like, I need to use video and I want good tools. And another moment that was like, that was when after we did that, we started using Wistia ourselves as customers. Like we started actually trying to market with video. And that was an enormous turning point because very, very quickly we figured out, holy shit, like we've been guessing at what a product should be. And now we know, like we know what stuff would help us do our jobs better. And so we started innovating and building things on the product that it turns out the market really wanted because the market had the same challenges that we did. And I didn't really get that before. Like, I thought I could guess at what a good product was, but you have to be the customer, at least in my opinion, to truly understand which things are important. And now that's powered so much of what we do and our whole, you know, our brand, our, and our ethos of how we build product and how we present ourselves. So really the whole business has been transformed through some of that learning.
So, I mean, early on was like the cost of hosting video, I mean, or just storing it. Was that ever a big burden for you guys? I mean, this, you know, it's certainly much cheaper now than it was 10 years ago. Was that ever an issue? I mean, I think of like video being like one of the most sort of resource intense things to store.
Yes, it is. And I think we see that even in our gross margins today, that our gross margins are not going to be the same as like a lot of SaaS businesses because video is so expensive. I mean, part of the other reason we decided to start the company is that AWS existed and we thought, wow, it's going to be so cheap to start. And we also knew that we needed CDNs to make video, like the delivery of the video really fast. Mm-hmm. And we negotiated with this small CDN. It was called Panther Networks at just a per gig fee and per gig delivered. And they did not want to do that. And we said, look, this is going to be a huge thing, startup, like we should do this. And they're like, all right, we'll take the risk. And our first bill with them the first month was like $2. And I think this guy thought he was going to, you know, really sell like a big deal. And it took years for that to scale up. So we didn't even used to charge for how much viewing people have in the early days. We were just more focused on getting the usage. Yep. And then eventually, of course, you know, I don't think this guy got any credit for that, but the contract exploded, got really huge, and we figured out the prices came down. We figured out a way to like have it make sense with our business model. But yeah, it was, I think if we tried to start a year earlier, we couldn't have without a huge amount of capital.
So like what's, speaking of like, you know, the landscape was obviously changing a lot then. So what does the hosted video space look like now compared to then? I mean, to me, it almost seems less competitive, but I mean, that's obviously way outside looking in, but.
Yeah. In some respects, I think it's less competitive and in some respects it's more. So, you know, 5 years ago, there were a ton of companies that looked just like us and trying to do business video, and trying to do it for everybody at the same moment. And really, I think most people are focused on the delivery of the video as opposed to like the applications of the video. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we were just very, very persistent and we never raised a lot of capital, which I think gave us a lot of freedom because a lot of these competitors we had raised a lot of capital. And then to fuel their you know, their raises, they had to hire, they had to push aggressively, they had to build the big sales team. And the revenue wasn't there. The market was too early. So they floundered, they sold. They were acqui-hired, and it left us in this funny spot where actually there's less competitors today than we've ever had in some respects.
Sure.
Now there's more indirect competition because adding a video to a website's a lot easier than it used to be. Like when we started, you had to use a professional tool to do it. And today, you know, more CMSs and more applications and more video-centric things are being built. So it's not direct competition with us as like a business video platform, but it's like indirect in that like there are videos that you might not never need to put on something like Wistia. And it doesn't make sense to. And so for us, it's been an interesting balance of like with our business model, where should we be focused? And it's pushed us towards focusing on, you know, those power users who really care about the data and care about integrating into other systems and like the harder problems to solve, which tend to be the things I think that are live on and last over time, as opposed to like just someone just adding a video to their website.
To me, it would be especially in the past, I don't know, 2 years, the prevalence of video and probably more specifically, I think of like live video. I mean, that being a hard thing to not just want to chase that stuff, like when, you know, like live video on Facebook, such a huge thing, and streaming stuff on like Periscope or what. It's like, how do you not get distracted by that stuff and like trying to build and sort of capitalize on, I don't know, what could be a fad?
Yeah, I think we've been pretty good. Someone told me this analogy recently about competitors, and it stuck with me, which is like, imagine you're like on a mountain road and you have a competitor in front of you on something, and it's foggy and you're driving and it's these twists and turns. You want to pay attention to where their car is going, obviously, because you want to try to see the road. But the challenge you run into is if you stay too close and that competitor takes a turn off the edge of the mountain, you're going to, like, you're done.
Yep.
And I think we've tried to be willing to be patient on things like that and then figure out, like, what is the right form of, if it's live video or anything else, that's going to make its way to work, and how should Wistia play there? And maybe we should be integrating with other companies, maybe we should be building our own stuff. That's kind of how we treat it. And so I don't think we have to be first on everything, but by kind of being patient and looking at that, we end up usually figuring out, like, oh, well, live video is, there are a lot of people specializing in it. Facebook in particular is doing a huge campaign on it. You go and do the research, it's because live videos on Facebook are watched as much as produced videos on Facebook. So that means more producers for them, more ads, it all makes sense. And I don't see like a huge influx of people using Facebook live video and then requesting that same use at work, where I do see things like Snapchat changing behavior and making people more comfortable making authentic video. And that is changing expectations at work. So we try to look at those, what are those expectations that are changing, and then how does Wistia fit into that?
So, I mean, everything's sort of funneled through the lens of like, how will businesses need to use this?
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So a lot of entrepreneurs, I mean, myself included, have this sort of extensive history of trying lots of things. And I mean, most, if not all of them failing. But I mean, Wistia was for you, I mean, really sort of like your first foray into entrepreneurship, right?
Yeah, really. Yes.
So, I mean, what do you attribute the ability to, you know, here we are 10, 11 years later, that sort of your first real stab at entrepreneurship working out? I mean, luck, or do you think like it's just that hyper focusing on solving a niche problem, or what?
Yeah. I mean, definitely there is a lot of luck. I can remember specific moments that someone emailed us about something and we jumped on it really fast. It turned out that they were like an important person. They introduced us to their company. They talked about us publicly, and suddenly we saw like a boost come forward, and, you know, things like that. Like, I think, you know, at least for me, luck is about being persistent and being ready to capitalize on that luck. I actually think that the reason why we're successful is that in the early days, our cost of living was so low, and we kept it very dramatically low for the first 6 years of building the company. And what that meant was we needed $1,500 a month in revenue 2 years into building the business to cover all of our expenses, like housing.
That's incredible.
And everything, right? So when you need $1,500 a month in revenue, that seems really scary when you have zero. But that first month when we got someone paying like $400 a month, I was like, oh, we're not that far away.
Right.
Yeah. And then it was like 3 months later, you get another one. You're like, okay, I'm halfway there. And the amount of money we have in the bank is going to extend us a lot longer. And then again and again. And I think it was just like, I told people we were doing this. Brendan told people we were doing this. We were just unwilling to fail. And this seemed like the best way to give us the most options. And even today, we try to run Wistia very leanly. And I think it's been ingrained in us, and, you know, for better or worse, because sometimes, you know, you miss things when you run things shit that lean. But I also figure if I can keep running this business in 10 years, if I can build a business that lasts, then a lot, if I'm 3 months late on something, it doesn't matter.
So, I mean, in those early days, you said you and Brendan were like living in the same house, working out of the house, or?
Yes. Yeah. So we were living in, yeah.
You're married now. Were you married then, or?
I was not married there. My girlfriend, who is now my wife, did live in that house. And Brendan's girlfriend, who is now his wife, also lived in that house for a while. And there was a period of, we spent 2 years working out of the house. And then another 2 years living together while we worked out of a quote real office. And I think it enraged our girlfriends for a long time because Brent and I would be working all day, talking all day about shit. And then we'd all be eating dinner because we like, it was almost like commune style, like sure. sharing food with everybody. And we wouldn't shut up about Wistia. And then when we were commuting, we'd commute together. We wouldn't shut up when we got back. And they're like, what is wrong with you guys? Like, this is all you talk about. This is all you do. And so at some point, it's like, yeah, probably I should move out. My girlfriend and I should move out. And it was like a year and a half later that we decided to get married. And I don't think that that's I don't think that's a surprise given given what it means when you actually have your own space. So, yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy time to spend that much time together. And it was great.
Sure. I mean, how was that? You mentioned operating on such a lean budget. I mean, was that, did that strain your relationship, or was it just sort of like, it's just been like this from the beginning? Like, we're essentially kids right out of college. So like, we don't really know any different.
It was basically that. It was like, we were a year out of college. It was just like, we're used to this.
Yeah.
And we literally had a conversation that was like, if we can just not change our lifestyles, then we can probably do this for a while. Like, college has been fun. It wasn't like I was complaining that we were in a shitty house, even though we were in a shitty house. Like, it was fun. And that was a very conscious decision. And it was interesting because in that first year that I was out of school, I had friends who went into investment banking and consulting, and they started getting paid real money very quickly, and they all got nice apartments. And it also became clear to me that now that they could go to fancy dinners, they wanted to go to fancy dinners. They wanted to keep doing that. And it was just like, we just kind of assumed that we'd get used to whatever we were doing. So we just tried not to get used to stuff. And I think it seems to have worked.
Well, I think it's a hard part for people who don't start out building anything. I mean, it's like when they've had sort of a typical job and then they have to potentially, cut back, and it's hard to make that adjustment. And it's even harder, throw in kids and all that stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, today having I'm married, I have a daughter, we have things that we like to do and people we like to see, and we travel and all that stuff. If you told me I had to do this today, it'd be really hard, much, much harder to do. And I'm thankful for that. And I do think a lot about that, to your point of like, what are the steps someone can take that make it those early days like easier to try to do something like this?
Okay. And I have this conversation, or my wife and I have this conversation a lot, where, I'm same as you in that, I mean, I started building stuff in college. And my wife and I got married right after college, and we haven't ever known, real sort of stability when it comes to finances, in the sense that I've always just sort of been an entrepreneur. So we've had the ups and downs. That's just been part of it for us. But I mean, you think of somebody who hasn't done that, and I mean, it's the barrier to entry for them it's substantial, and it's hard to even like help somebody get through that because you've already got these like expectations about what life is supposed to be like, right?
I mean, I've talked to a lot of people who do the consulting thing, and they figure out how to become a consultant, and then they hope that they're going to have time to work on their own project. And it's just hard because, when someone's calling you and they're like, hey, here's 20 grand for this project, you're like, oh my God, like that would be.
You can't say no to that, right?
You can't say no to it. And then at the same token, you're not able to invest in yourself. I think it's also hard because then if you raise a lot of money, you get on the treadmill of raising a lot of money. And I think that's why people really celebrate raising money, because obviously it allows you to do this. It can be the cushion. And that's why I always try to encourage people, if they're raising money, that like you should see if you can also manage your lifestyle at the same time, just to get you more out of that.
What's been like, you mentioned earlier that moving from the sort of internal private videos to making like, Wistia can host all the videos, and then like being your own customers, were kind of two points, that maybe changed things for you guys. I mean, was there anything else where there's been this one or two things that really changed growth for you guys, especially in the past, maybe, 5 years?
Let's see. Yeah. So being our own customer was a huge one, from a product perspective and the marketing perspective. I think there's like a, there's a mindset when for a long time when we would try something, if it didn't work, we would just assume that that thing didn't work for Wistia. So an example is like we try scaling sales and we're like, oh, doesn't work. Like, I guess sales doesn't work at Wistia.
Right.
And then later I started to realize, no, it probably does work. I just don't know the Wistia way of doing it. And there is a difference there, which is like in that second world, you want to figure out how to sustain the bets that you're taking. And so right now, today, I think a lot about like projects that we've tried and how long we've tried them for and have we tried them enough different ways. And often it's like continuing to try to work on a problem and trying lots and lots and lots of different solutions that eventually is where the breakthrough comes. And so there's been lots of little breakthroughs that have added up to big ones for us just by doing that. But it's, I don't know, the macro level things are like when we really started marketing by being our own customer, how we started thinking about the product like that. And I would say, I feel like I've learned a lot about organizational design and how to try to structure an organization that works autonomously, doesn't need a lot of help, and how important that is. And we really missed that for a long time. And when we figured that out, it made a huge difference.
What, sort of bouncing off that, I mean, like, what have been some of the, I don't know, maybe atypical customer acquisition strategies for you guys? Like, I remember in, what was this, probably 2012 or 13, I actually got, signed up for Wistia and got, like, a Wistia lighting package deal shipped to me from you guys. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, do you guys still try sort of random things like that, or?
We try lots of stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, so we did the lighting kit thing for a while, and it worked really well. Where we'd send people a lighting kit in a box. But it was also kind of expensive and it took a lot of time to put together. So we're like, how are we going to scale this thing? We've given away an enormous number of t-shirts over the years. Yeah. I was just tallying this up recently and we've given away like 16,000 shirts for the last 2.5 years.
You know, you need somebody full time just to ship t-shirts.
Well, basically it started small, it kept getting bigger and bigger. And then we outsourced it to one firm and then they couldn't handle it, do it to another one. We have like a new iteration of it coming soon. And it's funny because like, it's pretty hard to track the success of giving out t-shirts because they don't work as advertising. They work, I think, as like, as a brand impact thing. Like if someone gets a shirt and they love it and it's soft and it sits in their drawer and they look at it and they think, oh, that's one of my favorite shirts, then they're going to recommend your company more. I think a lot of the things that I tell myself and I remind myself of is like, if you look before today, like a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago, there were a lot of incredible companies that were built. A lot of them were built to be quite big. A lot of them were built by like trust and instinct. And you can have as much data as you want on like how a marketing campaign is performing. But if you really believe in it and can sustain the bet, obviously, often it ends up working. And like content marketing was that way for us. And we started doing it. We kept doing it. It took years before it really started to work. And now today, like an enormous amount of our traffic comes from content marketing. And of course, it makes sense. You make great stuff. People like it. They share it. Gets indexed. More people see it. It gets shared more, blah, 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 blah. And suddenly you have this like asset of thousands of posts and videos and comments and discussions, and they all end up being this like magnet for you. Or advertising. Like we've played around with advertising. It's so hard to track until you realize that like all these giant brands do it all the time and they had to start and figure it out. And it usually comes down to something that connects with you and that you're proud of. And then the question is like, how can you sustain it long enough such that you get the, you know, the qualitative learnings that make you feel comfortable that the quantitative ones will come eventually. So I just try to think about like our context and the history of building companies a lot. And what are the things that everyone's always done that we should be figuring out like the Wistia way of doing?
Yeah. Well, I think like you mentioned the content marketing bit where I mean, it requires so much work up front and the payoff might not come for a long time. And it's the same with maybe traditional advertising, whether that's something like a t-shirt or a, you know, billboard or anything like that's a brand play as well. But I think like the thing that you mentioned early on is how you guys took on relatively like a small amount of capital, and you were never forced to make decisions purely to like really to, I guess, to stay in business, right? Like, I guess things weren't ever that dire that, you know, you had hired so far ahead of runway that you were going to go out of business if you couldn't figure out how to close some huge deal soon. So,
yeah, we did have like, we purposely underhired for a long time to try to get enough runway such that we didn't run into that problem. We did raise two angel rounds, and after the first one, we like made a miscalculation and had a huge legal fee come in conjunction with some other couple huge fees. And we realized, oh my God, we're going to run out of money like really fast.
Yep.
And it happened to be at a moment of time when we were switching from the private, just private video to also embedding and using video for marketing. And that changed the business so much that we were able to go back to our investors and say, hey, look, like we figured something out here. Like, bad news, we're close to running out of money. Good news, I think if we just sustain, we will get to profitability. And they're like, haha, like you're not going to get to profitability, but you're right that you found something. And then we just continued the same strategy of staying lean. So I've been there. I've been days away from it, and sheer luck, you know, has of like the timing of when we tried something working out is what helped us pull through.
But you never, I mean, you never had to like you pretty intentionally stayed off the train as much as possible of like having to keep raising round after round.
Yeah. Oh yes.
Feeding
yes,
that yes, right,
yes.
And so
yes.
So it's like, those decisions, you can take risks like, well, we've been doing content marketing for 5 years and now, you know, we've got thousands of posts, but like you can't set out to do that up front unless you can, you're willing to like wait for the payoff.
Yes.
And I think like a lot of entrepreneurs, especially in their early days, get like keep trying to find these like quick wins.
Yeah.
Because almost they have to.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's completely right. And I think the thing that I always think about is like, how do I get myself into a position that this can go for the long term? Because it'll probably work over the long term. But also a lot of those quick wins, you have to do them and they also disappear. Like, yep. You know, they're a quick win because everyone hasn't discovered it. Once they discover it, it stops working. And that's like classically how marketing works. And it's, you know, we've learned that lesson many times where we tried something, it worked super well, and then everyone started doing it, completely stopped working. And so you can keep piling those things up, but if you're not also like doing the long-term things, even just kind of planning for success, I think it gets harder, you know, year down the line, if 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, if your company's still going, you haven't done those long-term things, you're like, shit, I wish I had done that earlier.
Yeah. So I would say like you guys are, a really creative company in that, you know, you obviously you produce a ton of content and it's like, it's lighthearted stuff. Like you don't take yourself too seriously, with a lot of the marketing stuff. I mean, has that always been the case or did that become the case after a few years? How does like that sort of lighthearted creativity played a role in the company?
It's played a huge role. And, you know, we were just basically not getting a lot of traction. And had this website that made us look like super professional. That's what we thought. I think anyone looking at it now would be like, what a joke. Like, this is a tiny business. But, you know, our management page had a management page. It didn't say employees. And we tried to imply that there are more employees that worked at the company, and there weren't. And we did all these things like that. And nothing was really working. So at some point we said, well, let's just make a team page that is so we can send it to our parents. And there were six people in the company at that point. And so we took a photo of the six of us. Stay in front of a whiteboard because that seemed like a really businessy thing to do, and sent it around. And Brendan did something funny to it, which is he basically made it that if you typed dance on the page, it would start playing Girl Talk on these like crappy GIF of like lasers would like come on behind us. It seems so dumb, and he literally did it because it was someone on the team. It was their birthday, and Brendan just thought it would be fun to do this for this guy, Jeff. He's like, oh, Jeff will appreciate this. So he did it. And we tweeted it out and we, you know, put it on Hacker News and all the other things that we did back then for everything else. And we just assumed nothing would happen. And this time what happened is like it took off and went viral. People were like, this is so funny. It's the best team page I've ever seen. All this stuff. And, you know, we'd made it for ourselves. We made it basically for our parents and friends. And it was not professional. It was authentic and weird. And then a few weeks later, we got a new influx of sales. And at that time, we had a 2-week free trial. So you'd look back at 2 weeks from when those trials started, and they all started that same day. I was like, holy shit. Like, our silly little team page that we made for ourselves that was completely goofy and not professional, the opposite of what we had before, just got as much customers. And then that happened again and again. And we like made videos that were behind the scenes that were goofy and people loved that. We did more. And I started to realize, wait a second, this authentic stuff, the stuff where we're showing behind the scenes, the stuff where we're honest about the size of our company and our challenges and all this stuff actually is what people connect with. And one of the key insights there was that every single person, even if you're selling to a business, like, they're an individual, they have a personality, they want to work with people they like. Like, we make emotional decisions that we rationalize. And so it all kind of like kept encouraging us more and more and more to try to be really creative and lighthearted in how we communicate. And now there's sometimes that we communicate things and it's pretty unbelievable. Our community will say, hey, this doesn't feel like you guys, like, you're not, it's not fun enough. It's like, oh, well, we're talking about something that's like changing your account. We didn't think it should be fun. They're like, no, that's what I expect of you. It's like, okay, good to know. So yeah, it started with like a small win, and then over time has turned into, you know, so much of what Wistia is, which is amazing because it's, I feel like, who we've always been. We just weren't always willing to show it.
Yeah. So wrapping things up. So what's the focus for you guys for the next 6 to 12 months? Anything like specific you guys are really honing in on, or just kind of keep doing the same things?
Yeah, no, we're launching a new product in June, which I'm really excited about. And we're basically, you know, talking about like watching those trends that are happening. We're just seeing that like more and more and more people are getting comfortable making authentic video. And as it's becoming easier to make video and video that's high quality and looks really good, it's video is spreading more across organizations. So it's not just being used for marketing anymore. It's being used for smaller audiences. Sometimes that's like one person.
Yeah.
And in our customer base, we've seen a lot of companies that are starting to use video for sales, and using videos for partnerships and business development, all this stuff. And they'll make one video for one person, and if it works, they get one customer. But it's become so cheap to make a video that it actually, the economics make sense. So we've got a lot of things brewing there. We're trying to make it easier to make the videos, integrating into a lot of different companies that make it easy to make these like really incredible videos, trying to build more tools into the product that help Wistia, help you use Wistia and video across your business, not just in marketing. So there's a lot of stuff coming, which is just really fun and really exciting.
That sounds awesome. All right. Well, that's all I got, Chris. Thanks for hopping on the call, man. It was good talking to you. There we have it. Hope you enjoyed it. Check out founderchats.com for a whole pile of other chats. And thanks for listening.